Hey, everyone, this is Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast. We're excited to provide a special type of podcast here that we haven't really done before in the past. This is actually a partner podcast. We're partnering with the National Tropical Weather Conference. They are really an authority of collecting and disseminating hurricane information, both on preparedness, forecasting, messaging. The National Tropical Weather Conference has been around for some time, and they're actually the stars of GeoTrek podcast number 39. We brought on Alex Garcia and Tim Smith. You can enjoy the National Tropical Weather Conference every week online at hurricanecenterlive.com. That's hurricanecenterlive.com. Typically, you'll see a Wednesday broadcast every week throughout hurricane season. And there's also a live National Tropical Weather Conference the beginning of April every year in South Padre Island, Texas. Well, we're partnering with NTWC, the National Tropical Weather Conference, to bring you this episode of the GeoTrek podcast. It's a recent episode that we recorded in the NTWC with Jason Aragani. He's a regional vice president with Home Depot. He oversees operations, customer experience, and associate development. And what I love about this podcast with Jason, he really has a vision of how Home Depot can help you prepare for disasters and respond to disasters after they hit. I know you're going to love this episode of the GeoTrek podcast with Jason Aragani.
Hey everybody, welcome to NTWC Plus. Great to have you along today for another program that I know is going to be fun and exciting. The Home Depot joining us today to talk about some of the things they do during, before, and after a storm. I know we rely on Home Depot in a big way as we try to prepare for storms and then afterwards as well. With us today, as always, former director of the National Hurricane Center, Bill Reed. Good morning, Bill. Where are you today? That's not your usual backdrop.
I wish it was in the summer. I'm in Chimayo, New Mexico, which is 6,500 feet higher than my League City house and 25 miles north of Santa Fe.
Good to have you along. What was the dew point there this morning?
I don't have a dew point measurement, but I think it probably is in the low 30s, somewhere along there. We didn't have dew this morning. Yesterday we did.
Dew point in the low 30s. I've heard about that. I haven't experienced that in a very long time. Hurricane Hal is with us this morning. Dr. Hal Needham from, somewhere in Southeast Texas where the dew point's about 100, right, Hal?
Yeah, that's right. You know, not as bad as you might expect for early to mid-September, but we'll take it. I'm on a screen porch in Galveston, Texas. I can hear the locusts. It's a nice morning here.
Lovely. Good to see you from the outdoors, enjoying the great outdoors. How good to have you with us this morning. Let's thank our sponsors before we get to the program. They're with us week in and week out. USAA, from the very beginning, USAA has been a supporter of NTWC Plus, of the National Tropical Weather Conference, and of all we do here with these programs, and we sincerely appreciate their support for what we do. The South Padre Island Convention and Visitors Bureau, the host of the National Tropical Weather Conference. If you're looking for something to do in April, start planning now. You can join us there as we bring this wall of experts together to talk about the upcoming hurricane season. The 2026 hurricane season we'll be talking about. We'll be looking back at this season as well, hopefully with nothing to talk about. The Weather Company, Weather Boy, and LiveView, all supporters of NTWC Plus, and we appreciate all of them. All right, let's see. Hal, you have the intro this morning, so let's get to you. Take it away from the great outdoors.
Well, yeah, good morning, everyone. I'm so excited to introduce this morning's guest, Jason Aragani. He's a seasoned retail leader with more than two decades of experience at the Home Depot. Currently serving as regional vice president, he oversees operations, customer experience, and associate development across multiple markets, driving growth while strengthening community partnerships and supporting Home Depot's culture of service. Jason, thank you so much for taking time to come on NTWC Plus today.
Appreciate it, Hal. Thank you, everybody.
Jason, I had to ask you, I mean, Home Depot does such an amazing job providing for communities when there's not a disaster, but then we know disasters have geographies to them and seasonality. So how do you, you know, help respond to hurricane season as well? Are there special things you do to help hurricane-prone areas prepare?
Yeah, if you think about it, we talk about it in the art and science of response. And so my team currently, you know, the average tenure of the company is over 25 years. So they've been around the block once or twice, and they live actually out in the market. So they know their geography better than anybody else. And so we do take a lot of that tribal knowledge to know what's going to happen traditionally in those markets. And then we couple that with a bunch of science, as you guys can all appreciate and all the latest, greatest in technology, whether it be how we're forecasting and using AI and machine learning to enhance the responses. But our goal is in those markets that tend to get impacted more frequently. We do have a kind of a safety stock that we place in those stores from a product perspective. And then aside from our 2,000 plus stores, we also have a, you know, one of the world's largest and most efficient supply chain networks. So we're always revamping and tweaking our approach to what products we keep in those warehouses, how we stage them, how we coordinate with our transportation companies to make sure that we can be the last to leave a market as long as it's safe for our associates and be the first ones back into a market whenever they're hit by any type of natural disaster. As you guys know, it's become a bit of a year-round you know, circumstance to have to deal with compared to just the traditional hurricane season that we used to have back in the day.
Yeah, Jason, that's amazing. Could you explain a little bit, how does this supply chain network work? I mean, I know y'all are on the scene right after a disaster. Is it a combination of technology? Do you have staging areas? I mean, how does all that work?
Yeah, and so we have different types of supply chain buildings across the country. We have some that are like a stocking DC, so they are designed to hold product. And those are where we put a lot of our hurricane response goods. You know, they're really designed to hold large quantities. We actually put them in certain what we call lanes, so areas that are very accessible and that we can get in and out of the building very quickly. We also do a lot of training with our supply chain partners on how do we dispatch correctly. And then some for those high commodity, high use items. So think generators or think pumps in the Northeast. We actually preload trailers just as an investment in our communities, and they sit there waiting. And so all we need to do is when we make a call to do what we call run a can load, trailer hooks up to it and it's gone. So we can turn that thing out in minutes compared to hours. And so it's a little bit of a different approach depending on where we're at in the country and what it looks like. And then in addition to that, we have what we call rapid deployment centers. Those are more of a river, like kind of the products coming in and out, but we've changed the way that we go about releasing products so that we can recover full assortments even quicker. Traditionally, retailers have focused on just storm SKUs, a handful of items. We've evolved our approach to having the storm SKUs, but giving the full assortment back to our communities, depending on what their need is, as quickly as possible.
Jason, what's the geographic reach? Let's say a hurricane hits the coast. We know like some of those coastal communities are kind of offline for a while. I mean, will you actually see contractors drive well inland to like come and get supplies that, like that it's not only really directly impacting those communities at the coast, but will you see this like geographic reach inland to get supplies?
Yeah, that's a great question, Hal. And yes, you, as you can imagine, depending on what the impact zone looks like, kind of whichever way the interstates or major highways going into that area look like, we'll have contractors stopping along the way. And I would say, honestly, that's where we leverage a little bit more of that tribal knowledge, that the experience that our team has. They know the way that people that live in that market would travel most frequently. And so we can kind of identify those stores quickly. We also do use technology. We're watching sales almost, you know, by the minute at that point to see what's happening so we understand the demands and what types of products our pros are going to look for. And as you guys know, after a major disaster, you'll have pros come in from all over the country to help rebuild the communities. And so we even see where they're purchasing in their hometown and bringing it into a disaster zone. You know, fortunately for us, you know, over about 50% of our customer base is pros, and we have a very intimate relationship with them. And so we have a really great two-way communication to understand where they anticipate their needs so that we can make sure that we're set up to help support them.
Jason, this is amazing. You and your team do such a good idea, do such a good job of seeing things and preparing things from the product perspective. What advice would you give residents that live in a hurricane prone or disaster prone area when it comes to like getting out ahead of these events from the product perspective that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I lived most of my life in Tampa, Florida. I was a bit of a weather junkie myself and went through a bunch of storms. My family's still down there. So you hear from an early age growing up down there, you're better off to be prepared and not use it than to not be prepared and not have the opportunity to use it. And I do think that is still the mantra that I continue to preach today, especially being at, you know, ground zero on so many different disaster responses. You know, having a plan with your family or your loved ones, knowing, you know, when you're going to evacuate, where you're going to go, what supplies you need to have to protect your home or where it is, your assets, and knowing what you're going to need to potentially, you know, survive through any kind of initial impact, and then what your kind of rebuild plan is going to look like. Having that kind of mapped out, I think really does put your safety in a much better place, but also just eases your mind a bit. As you guys have, you know, have encountered, the stress that goes along with all these natural disasters really, you know, brings a toll on people. And the more that they have a plan up front, it's still stressful, but it allows people to kind of navigate through that a little bit better.
Yeah, amazing perspective there, Jason. I really appreciate that. I'm going to pass the mic over to Bill Reed now. He always has some very insightful questions, and I'm sure you got a few queued up there, Bill.
Yeah, I'm writing as fast as I can. Now I can't read my writing, but a lot of what you're talking about kind of parallels how the National Weather Service works. The Hurricane Center, this big picture, we know what the hurricane's going to do, and get that out there, but as far as local impacts, it's impossible for one person on the forecast desk to know what's going to happen in all 2,000 some counties that are in the hurricane risk zone. So we do rely on the local offices exclusively for that. So I'm glad to hear how you work that. One question I have is here in Texas, a lot of industries now have representatives working with the state EOCs to make sure everything's coordinated properly. Does Home Depot have a role in that also?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. And so, yeah, within our corporate securities team, we actually have a director of business continuity, which includes all of our disaster response as well. And internally, we call it our command center, but we really mimic what a lot of your EOCs are doing. And we have partnerships with all that. We also use a third-party company to kind of make sure that we're staying up to speed on the latest and greatest of how those operations work. And they actually embed individuals into the local EOCs as well to make sure that not only are we learning from them, but we're also provide any information or intelligence that we may have to help support them as well. Lastly, I would just say is, you know, I've taken this as a great compliment to Home Depot over the past, you know, call it a decade. We have a lot of government officials or government agencies that have, you know, reached out to us to help leverage, whether it's for that supply chain need or intel as well. And, you know, that mutually beneficial relationship, I really think is a difference for the communities that get served, or public and private are working together.
It really is amazing, because I think back to the one storm that I had to work as in charge of the Houston office was Rita, and all the issues that fell out after that. Much of what you guys do now and in support of that didn't exist just 20 years ago. So we've come a long way in doing that. Okay, now you have let's say you have your store down on Galveston Island. Obviously, it's in the threat zone. What's the operating plan for the employees and their families, for that matter? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, no, it's a challenging situation, because you're always taking some guesstimates and estimates on what the kind of impact is going to be. We do, like I was talking about, for your personal plan. You know, we also have a business plan as well as what that looks like to take care of our associates. You know, we have some guidelines where we take precautions based on the severity of the storm. So based on the strength of the storm, based on the, you know, potential flood zone of the storm, we'll make decisions based on when to open a store, close a store, making sure we give them ample time on when to exit a store. We also use a lot of technology to help us understand even what the travel times and the curfews that may be in place, to gas stations that are available. We make sure all those things are kind of calculated as we make a decision on when to open or close a store. And then they have a very prescriptive plan on what does it look like to, we call it hard close the store, meaning like, hey, we are going to 100% evacuate the store. We need to make sure it's safe and secure. And also we need to make sure it's in a position that when we're able to get back in here, we can get operations back up and running quickly so that we can serve our communities. And then if it's a large scale storm, and most likely something that hit a store like that Galveston store probably is going to have a pretty wide impact. We make a determination on when we open our command center. And our command center, we base here at our Atlanta, we call our store support center, our headquarters. And we bring in experts from all areas of our business that have already been pre-trained and most likely are seasoned in our response. We get them all onto one floor in the building, merchandising, supply chain, transportation, store operations, human resources. We bring in a representative from every transportation company that we leverage, and we operate out all that out of this building. And it would look very similar to what you would see in a government EOC, where we've got the monitors and the technology to be able to get real-time information. And then the last piece of it is we host regular calls and with our field leaders to make sure that we're balancing out what we're perceiving here in Atlanta through all the information with what they're actually feeling there locally. And we're making decisions collectively. Home Depot is big on what we call the inverted pyramid. There's a true belief that our associates on the front line are the most in tune to the business and the most important associates in the company. And so we really take what they give for information very heavily and put that into our actions.
That's just amazing. An interesting thing that I always thought about that's a challenge to say you have an area that's impacted and your store area was impacted, but the store's okay. Do you like surge outside Home Depot employees in to relieve the locals so they can take care of their own problems because of the storm?
Yeah, it's such a great point, Bill. Sometimes it's easy to forget as you kind of get back into the speed of the business picking up after a storm that a lot of the associates are going through the same thing at their own house. And one, I'm always just blown away and impressed by the perseverance of the associates and their commitment, not just to the Home Depot, but really to their communities to get back in there. But to help relieve that, yes, depending on the severity of it, we will either bus in or fly in or whatever we need to do to help make sure that we have the right amount of support, but also to relieve our associates that are in the impacted zone to take care of what they need to do at home. And so we'll reserve hotels if we need to, we'll rent buses or vans to bring those associates inside of those impacted areas. And then we just try to take the stress off of them by providing food and other accommodations as well.
Outstanding. Love to hear that. Have you ever had a store either get destroyed or have major damage from a hurricane?
Yeah, unfortunately, we have over the years had several, whether from hurricanes, floods, I think about Denham Springs was actually one of the floods down there in Baton Rouge, the 100-year flood. Unfortunately, that store was under about 8 feet of water. And so we had to think through what it looked like. Quick side story. We got into the building once the water receded, and we knew it was going to be a large challenge. What we weren't expecting is the amount of snakes inside the store that we were navigating through as well. And so that some folks volunteered to go do other activities, but in that store, we basically had to take the whole thing apart, left the shell, re-merchandise it, get all the electrical and technology back up. Unbelievable from that position to open in 6 weeks. And so we could get back to serving that community there in Baton Rouge.
Yeah. Snakes are actually smarter than we give them credit for. They know when people leave and they say, they left, we're going in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That was definitely the case.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of rats go in there too. So snakes really, they get fed. Yeah. What else did I have here? Oh, yeah. You need a lot of weather support for that. Do you guys hire a private weather company to specifically deal with the specifics of your operation?
Yeah, so we do have a third-party emergency response company that helps with us. And what's great about that is they have a lot of different resources for us. So if we open the command center, we actually bring in staff meteorologists. We also bring in folks that have come from emergency command center kind of background. And so they will help tell us kind of where we should be putting our attention. They'll kind of give us information that we can decision off of. I think since I've been back in this world the past couple of years, I don't know if they really appreciate my appreciation for weather, because I think I'm a junior meteorologist. But we have a great relationship going here where we share ideas back and forth and help. Really the big thing is getting to the facts and not getting caught up in the media. Yes, we do have different weather stations playing on the TV, but we really try to hone into the data that we are curating ourselves, kind of getting through to the factual parts.
Yeah, I always had a lot of professional meteorologists bristle at non-meteorologists doing weather, but I look at the number one thing people need to be prepared for weather is if you're exposed to a certain amount of weather that could be detrimental to you, become an amateur meteorologist. Yeah. And know what it takes to find out about the weather. And you're one of those, because it's important to your job. It's important you know weather. It's a lot easier on us that are trying to explain a difficult forecast if you understand what we're up against.
Sure.
Tim.
I'm just curious how often the team, if you will, gets put to work at Home Depot, that you have a, whether it's a hurricane or a tornado or a flood. Is this a multiple times per year that you guys really have to step up and put the plan into place? How often do you guys have to do that?
Yeah. So, I almost don't want to jinx myself because we've not had to open the command center this year. As you guys all know, it's been a relatively quiet year, but I do have vacation next week. So I fully expect that we'll have to open it. I'll have to come back from vacation. But, last year was five times, five times last year we had to do a full command center. We also have different levels, just like you would for a local response from an EOC. So we have a rapid cell team that we'll deploy. We have a mini command center, depending on the scope. And then the full command center probably runs about 5 to 6 times per year on average. Of course, we've had some years where it's been much more than that. So, kind of my first foray running the whole show was Harvey. And as you know, we had like 5 storms back to back that year. So, we spent some time there. We definitely spent some time there.
Have you found yourself in the middle of it beyond your center there, actually in the disaster zone on occasion?
Yeah, typically I'll let my team get in there first. One, not to cause any more stress for them, but I'll let them get in first. But it's part of the Home Depot culture. It's important for us to be out in the field to truly understand what's going on. And so once we kind of get things at a point where we can get out there, we will get in there ourselves as quickly as we can. Most recently, tragic flooding in Kerrville, Texas. I was on the ground there within 48 hours with our nonprofits, our foundation, and others, just to make sure that we had our true gauge on where we could help the most.
Talk about the foundation a little bit. You mentioned that. Give us a little more info on that.
Yeah, the Home Depot Foundation is our arm to make sure that we're back out in the communities, and it does much more than just disaster response. But disaster response is one of its primary pillars, and so we work with a lot of nonprofit organizations. Think the American Red Cross, Convoy of Hope, Team Rubicon, etc. And we really are trying to make sure that we're facilitating whatever they need to get done on the ground, and while also making sure that we're taking care of our communities and our associates as well. Even this year, we've committed over $9 million to disaster response, in a relatively quiet year. But we blend that with what we're doing with our own Home Depot, Team Depot volunteers, so associates of volunteering, and that of what our nonprofit organizations are needing to do as well in those areas.
I was going to ask, you mentioned a bunch of partnerships. I was going to ask about that. It's one of my lists here. Talk about some of the partnerships that you have before, during, and after a major disaster.
Yeah. And so, I think about Team Rubicon first. Team Rubicon, great organization, centered around using, ex-military individuals to get into areas and kind of be on that front side of recovery, search and rescue, muckouts, things of that nature. We'll help support them, whether it is having an area to set up their base camps in our parking lots, tools and resources to get into areas, or if there's some kind of financial need that they need to do to get their execution rolled out. World Central Kitchen, great organization that goes in and just starts feeding the community. And that could start with first responders and then lead to the overall community. They do a fantastic job, can feed typically hundreds, up to thousands of people once they get into full speed in a disaster recovery. And again, we'll offer up our areas or any kind of resources that they need. American Red Cross, City of Hope, there's a long list of a lot of national partners. Then we have some local partners that we help with as well. But, we really kind of put it in that let's help get the market, search and rescue done first. Then let's help them kind of get prepared for repairing and rebuilding. And then what I think is great about the foundation is they've really leaned into over the past several years, how do we think about the long-term recovery of an area? And so we're working with multiple local nonprofits talking about, what's the city's plan of rebuilding and where would they need help? Where do they see gaps potentially in the public sector where private could step in there and help them, fill in any of the gaps that may be needed there? Making sure that it's they have financial support for the long term, but then also any other kind of guidance or support that they would need to help make sure a market recovers after the news crews leaves and other things, kind of make the headlines.
Seems like there's probably some disasters where your involvement just lasts a very long time.
For sure. Yeah. Any of those large hurricanes, large floods, I mean, we will be there for the long haul. And if you think about it, our stores, our business, we are there for the long haul. We want to be part of that community. We feel an obligation that we need to be there to help support that community for the long haul. And like I said a little bit earlier, we also are just reminded that our associates are part of that community. We want to make sure we're there for them as well.
Let's get Jason back in here. Let me ask a lob of softball in there. You know, we all know that plywood is a big seller, maybe, you know, ply locks and things like that leading up to a hurricane. What are some of the other big sellers that, you know, as a hurricane's approaching that might surprise us?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what surprises, but, you know, preparedness is all around plywood, generators, flashlights, things like water, as you can imagine. You know, those are pretty standard. I think when I say surprising is maybe how some folks use things. You know, we had a storm last year that blew through in Texas and Houston, a big windstorm, and they were using a certain type of wire, not the way it's intended, and I would say a bit dangerously, but the local community had figured out how to use that to set up their generators to their houses. Wouldn't recommend it, but you learn little nuggets like that every storm. But most of the stuff is fairly traditional, what you could imagine. We think of the storms in pre-strike or kind of preparedness, kind of recovery, and then we have rebuild, and it traditionally follows that kind of course of action.
I'll get back in here. I've had a lot of questions for a while now, so go ahead.
Yeah, Jason, to what degree do we see customized products that help mitigate natural disasters in a region? It could be hurricane shutters in Charleston, or maybe fire-resistant shingles in the Intermountain West. Do we see some of these customized products that are going to help mitigate against specific conditions in a location?
Yeah, no, super insightful. That's happening more and more, as you can imagine, too. Every time there's a disaster, the local governments are rethinking what their building code should be. And so you think about the wildfires out in California last year, they've really come down on new expectations of going forward. So yes, to your point, flame retardant, plywood, insulation, roofing, et cetera, is growing. And then there's, you know, preparedness products. There's a great product out there. They call them quick dams, but basically, you know, these sandless sandbags that you can deploy to protect your home or property, it's definitely become great. And then we're trying to make sure that we're staying on par with any of those other building code changes. Miami-Dade County has some of the strictest in the country, but that's definitely, as the population in the state of Florida has grown, they've kind of grown up along the coast as well. You're seeing that up in the Tampa and almost up in the Jacksonville areas. And so we're making sure that we're following suit and helping make sure our customers are prepared for anything they need to do as they're rebuilding or thinking about things differently.
Jason, I also wanted to ask, when we think about hurricane mitigation, we're thinking about wind, we're thinking about flood. In recent years, we've seen the danger of heat. You know, these hurricanes come in, like last year, Hurricane Beryl, Houston, Galveston, an early July hurricane at the hottest point of the year, and there were, you know, dozens of heat-related deaths. What kind of heat mitigating products might we see in the future? Might we see white shingles on roofs? Might we see reflective shingles or things that help air circulate through houses, more robust generators? What could we see in the future in relation to heat mitigation?
Yeah, the great points. We've rethought kind of our generator line structure to make sure we have something available for every customer, and depending on where they're at, what time of year, and whether it's just something basic to keep your refrigerator going, or, man, in Burl, we sold more portable and window air conditioners than we might have ever sold in one moment in time. And, you know, they have to be run off of a generator, so you gotta make sure you have a generator capable of doing that. So we definitely see things along those lines. And there's been a lot of technology. You mentioned roofing, roof coatings in parts of the country where they have flat roofs. There's a product called Tropicool. It's a white coating they put on top of the building, keeps the temperatures down. There's definitely an energy efficiency, but it definitely helps for that heat perspective as well. And so we do a lot of that. And then, you know, we also we sell a lot of products that help recharge batteries. As you guys know, most of our lives are run off of some type of battery. And then so portable cooling, whether it's neck fans or things of that nature, definitely pop during storms that are in those markets. And then a lot of clothing and products that, if you can get them wet, they stay cool, definitely tend to grow in popularity if you have a storm that hits during a heat wave or in a heat intense area.
Well, that's fascinating. And I guess the logic with like a window unit air conditioner is the central air is down, but you could run that window unit off a generator, right?
100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. Thank you, Jason. Bill, back over to you.
Oh, perfect timing. I had written down earlier about generators, but this is a bigger generator issue. Do you have backup generators on each one of your stores, or is that not economically feasible?
Yeah, so we do have generators on each of our stores, and you know, as storms have now spread, it used to be Florida. All of our Florida stores had the right size generator to run the full operations. As kind of these natural disasters have spread, we've spread along with it. So all of our stores have generators. All of our stores in our most impacted areas have generators capable of running a full operation, not just minimal operation. We've also expanded it to our supply chain network as well. We know that's just as critical. And, you know, we're coupling that as well with in all of our store markets and eventually all of our stores. You know, we're installing Starlinks to make sure that we have all kind of communications during storms as well if the local networks are down, which has been a real game changer for us over the past couple of years.
Yeah, boy, you just took away one of my questions. Great. Answer them as we go. With your, I'm curious, with your flooded store in Baton Rouge from that October 2016 non-tropical tropical rain, that did you have any really serious hazmat issues after that when you get that deep of water in an urbanized area?
Yeah, 100%. You know, we had to bring in some third-party companies that are experts in the hazmat remediation. And really, like I said, other than the shell of the building, we kind of started from scratch there. So some third-party support for sure, contractor support, and then our own internal teams to help put the stores back together. And we've encountered that, you know, over the years, you know, whether it been stores have impacted by tornadoes, other floods, you know, Hurricane Harvey definitely was one where we had multiple stores impacted. Maria down in Puerto Rico, you know, is definitely one where we've had, you know, different stores impacted. And we've learned and we continue to refine our response every time to make sure that we're there as quickly as possible for the community.
Good. Great. Great. I used to have an old friend in emergency management that he'd assess damage real simply. He'd go around the neighborhoods and count the blue tarps, called it the blue tarp index. The more blue tarps you had, the bigger the damage path was. And do you usually run out of blue tarp after a storm, or are you able to keep the supply running as long as people need them?
It's definitely in high demand. Not going to say we've never ran out because sometimes you just can't get it exactly right. But it is definitely in high demand. You know, ironically, you bring up that example. And some of the recent Florida storms the past couple of years, I took one of my peers down there who doesn't work as much in the storm side of things, but he was coming down there to help lend some support with me. We were flying in and he leaned over and he goes, "I didn't know there was such a Mediterranean influence in Punta Gorda, Florida." I was like, "Those are not blue tiles. Those are blue tarps on the roofs." It's not a Mediterranean influence, but I appreciate you're with us for the moral support.
Wow. Yeah. I've reached that age where I don't want to go up any ladders. So someone else will have to put blue tarp on my place if the occasion comes to pass. I think I've lost my train of thought. Tim, what you got?
Yeah, I've got just, do you guys do any kind of workshops or community events, things like that on home preparation or personal preparation for storms?
Yeah, you know, over the years, we used to do a lot of stuff in person. And what we've learned is actually we have a bunch of resources on our website. And we do some virtual classes and an online kind of preparation stuff on there. That's really turned out to be where we get the most draw and the most attention. So we've really leaned in pretty hard on that side of things. So HomeDepot.com, you'll find a whole section on disaster preparedness. That's really been the way that we've leaned in compared to the in-person stuff we used to do back in the day.
What kind of things do you recommend to folks who are watching today? And fortunately, it's quiet. I think you're going to get your vacation in next week, hopefully. But what do you recommend to our viewers that live in a hurricane zone as far as what they can expect from Home Depot? They can go there, they can get things. I mean, what's your recommendation?
Yeah, and so we're, you know, you right now when we don't have a disaster pending, I go back to like, make sure you have the basics. You can find checklists and things of that readily on our website, things that would be great to have in your home to be ready. If unfortunately you are forced with it, we're going to be there to help you get the products that you need. I've just asked for some patience. Sometimes those lines can get a little long, but we are going to do everything in our power to make sure we serve the communities. Like I said, we are going to stay open as physically long as possible, as long as it's safe for our associates, so make sure they can seek shelter. So we'll be there as well. I think just knowing that, you know, Home Depot is a place that you can come if you need something. I would say we don't advertise this, but we've had instances where, you know, something comes up so quickly that we've had people seek shelter in our buildings. We've had people sleep in our buildings. We're going to do whatever we need to do to take care of the community and be there for you. And we're going to be the first ones open back up as soon as we get the all clear. We already have letters that our associates that are part of our response teams are prepared with, so they can get past any kind of law enforcement blocks and make sure that we're secure there. We're also going to make sure that you have a safe environment if you need to come to a store after the fact. So if we have an area where there's enough demand, we'll have some third party security teams as well there to make sure the shopping experience is comfortable for you. And we're going to want to continue to lead by setting the example of the right way to respond to our communities when they are in a time of need.
That's terrific. Thank you.
Last thing I'll say, Tim, I just think it sums it up so well. And you might remember this commercial is probably 15 years old, but for me, it was just kind of the hook when I got here. You'd see a Home Depot delivery truck pull up to a stop sign, and you hear on the radio that, you know, the National Weather Service talking about a storm. You see a large storm front off to the side and then kind of a sunny side to the right. And he's got his turn signal to the right to go where he's supposed to go, to the sunny side. And I just think it sums it up as he hears the call come out from the National Weather Service for help. He turns the signal to the left and drives towards the storm. And that is our mentality, is like, we're going to be there to help support.
Love that. That's terrific. It drives the message home. What have we learned today? This has been a fascinating program. What's your takeaway?
I mean, so much. You know, what I'm really getting from you, Jason, is there's a whole culture behind preparedness and being engaged and involved with your community. And I think what I hear from you is a lot of this is 365 days a year. It's not just when you're in the cone of a hurricane strike.
100%. Yeah, the we are always planning continual improvement. That's our goal. You know, we know we're not going to be perfect, but we're going to be better every time and keep learning. And it's all year round, all the entire North America working together to make sure we're ready to go.
Jason, I do want to ask you, where do you see the path forward? Like, what does the next, say, 10 to 15 years look like in the industry?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are definitely leaning in and bringing in more AI and machine learning to help make sure that we can digest data and really understand the best way to respond and take some really educated guess on where that's going. I think that will continue. I think as supply chain networks continue to evolve and innovate, we're going to be able to leverage some of that innovation, whether it's on response time, whether it's on how you package products that together to get to areas, whether that might just be even going more direct to customer from our supply chain buildings. I think you'll have more options as that process evolves in the future. And we're already starting to see it today. Our stores are still going to be the forefront, and they are the mecca when we have something going on within storm-related areas. But our supply chain buildings now can also be leveraged as an asset, because they can, even if they are outside the geographic area, they can get in there quickly. So I think you'll continue to see things along those lines as well. And then lastly, you know, and this is more of a hope than, seeing a clear path on it right now. But I do think as we get homes that we call, you know, our smart homes, we're going to be able to get more real-time readings on any kind of potential weak points in your home that you might want to take preparation ahead of time, or a good assessment of how you were impacted, so that we can help respond back to you in a more personal manner and be able to support you in that way. So I think we'll see a lot of those types of things as we go forward here in the future.
Thanks, Jason.
Terrific. Bill, last question, last thought.
I just want to compliment you. I think I see that no plan is perfect, but yours is so thorough. I think the fact that you're looking at the issues before the storm and what your customers need, and actually what your company needs also, you have plans to take care of your employees that are in the risk area, and you're right on top of getting the supplies in that people need. That's just fabulous.
I appreciate it, Bill.
I think it shows Home Depot truly a leader in the industry and in the community, and on behalf of the community and all of us, thank you for spending time with us today. We appreciate it. It's been fascinating and eye-opening as to what you guys are doing. Jason, thank you.
No, I appreciate it. I mean, you guys are our rock stars in the weather world, so I get the opportunity to speak with you today is a big privilege and honor. Like I said, I was a weather junkie growing up. So, you know, just a great opportunity for to be here with you guys as well. And hopefully you take away, if you ever need anything from myself or the Home Depot, we're here to help support you and any needs that come your way as well.
I'm sure I'll be wandering through the store again this weekend, like I am most weekends. That's my toy store. So thank you. We appreciate that. I want to thank our sponsors who make the program a reality week in and week out. USAA, the South Padre Island Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Weather Company, Weather Boy, and LiveView, all the folks who make this a possibility. Bill, Hal, thank you. Jason, thanks for being with us today. We appreciate it. In the meantime, we invite you to join us again next week for another episode of NTWC Plus. Take care.
Well, thank you so much, Jason. What amazing insights. And again, thanks to our friends over there at NTWC, the National Tropical Weather Conference, for sharing the feed on this very dynamic conversation we had with the NTWC panel and Jason Aragani. I really walked away with two main take-home points from this podcast, but there are actually even many more. A story came to mind when I first moved to Galveston, where I live now. We're a vulnerable barrier island, very prone to hurricanes. I had a friend of mine that worked in historic preservation. He did a lot of maintenance and construction on houses. And I asked him, I said, when you go to a main retail store, if you go to a Home Depot or a place like this, can you find specialized products at the hardware store for the coastal environment, dealing with salt, dealing with hurricanes? And this was back in 2016. My friend, who had a lot of experience, said, no, in general, what you find in a place like Galveston is going to be similar to what you find in Missouri or Iowa. This was 9 years ago. I was so impressed to hear Jason Aragani's perspective that things have changed dramatically over the last 9 years. Jason mentioned that there are a lot of customized products now at Home Depot that specialize in mitigating local extreme weather events. So he mentioned flame retardant plywood, insulation, and roofing in places that are prone to wildfires. And he mentioned quick dams, for example, these mobile dams that you can put around your home if you're in a flood-prone area. So Jason really, I thought that was really interesting insight that Home Depot is doing everything they can to customize products to mitigate against extreme weather where you live. Really cool advancement, and I just commend them for doing that. Number two, I thought it was really interesting that there are a lot of products as well that help mitigate against heat. We think of heat with heat waves, say in the southwestern states in July. But what about heat after a hurricane hits your community and you've lost power for 2 weeks? Heat is a big problem to public health after disasters, especially for areas that lose electricity. Jason mentioned portable AC units, generators, and even some new innovative products. For example, coating on roofing that helps reflect sunlight. Really cool to hear about these products. Again, if you're concerned about heat in your community after a power loss, you may want to go to Home Depot and check out these innovative products that they have that can help keep your home cool, even if you don't have central air. Jason, thank you again for coming on the podcast and sharing these amazing insights of what Home Depot is doing to really position themselves before, during, and after disasters to help communities respond. And a huge thank you to our friends at the National Tropical Weather Conference. Again, you can partake and engage with NTWC Plus every single week during hurricane season. Go to hurricanecenterlive.com. That's hurricanecenterlive.com, or just look on social media for the National Tropical Weather Conference. Big shout out to Blue Leopard Agency, doing a lot of the magic behind the scenes. Jeremiah Long and Seneth Baker are involved in every single episode of the GeoTrek podcast, helping produce it and get it out there for as many people as possible to listen to the podcast. I'm Hurricane Hal, the host of the GeoTrek podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.